The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, bombs dropping on Paul Stapledon. A stand-up tour of the Outer Hebrides dressed as a sausage roll. Both things that commonly feature in Ian Holloway's wildest dreams, but not Saturday's 4-0 win at Wigan. As Blackpool provide the story of the opening Premier League weekend, the pot salutes Ian's tangerines and chortles at Wigan's lemon, Chris Kirkland. Elsewhere, we get our first look at Joe Cole at Liverpool. New club, but he still can't get 90 minutes. And we check out this year's Man City. Plus, we marvel at a rough weekend all round for keepers. Is it too early to start blaming these newfangled match balls? There's more shock and awe at Stamford Bridge and Maradona to Aston Villa. A brilliant idea, because you get plenty of shots from the Villa, if his history's anything to go by. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Right, hello world. Barry Glendening with us today.
Hi.
Hi, Barry. Sean Ingle also on board.
Hello, James.
And Fernando Duache.
Hello, guys. Good to be back as usual.
Great. And did you have a nice summer, Fernando?
Yeah, I did. It was interesting until the 2nd of July.
Was that Brazil game with Holland?
Yeah.
That was, months later, have you kind of come to terms with that at all? Or?
Yeah, I have. It was just like a very wasted opportunity, a beautiful sunny day that I spent in a football stadium seeing Brazil crumbling. Yeah. In front of the world.
But well, happier news about the Seleção, of course, these days. We'll be hearing more about the new look Brazil later on. Shall we start, though, with the big story of the weekend, the tangerine dream, Blackpool? A result, this, that was presaged by so many papers who all had top articles about, is this the worst Premier League side ever? Even Ian Holloway was in on that, saying, we're not good enough for the Premier League. We're not even good enough for the Championship. And then this, Barry.
Everyone has been predicting doom and gloom for Blackpool, and their manager has been leading the charge in doing them down and denigrating them. But they played really well. They probably should have won by a lot more than 4-0. If you want to really nitpick, they could have won by 6 or 8. Wigan are diabolical, but absolutely sombreros aloft to
Blackpool, yeah.
They only need three teams in the league to be worse than them to stay up, obviously. And Wigan, it's difficult to see anyone being worse than Wigan at the moment,
right?
Because they lost their last game last season 8-0. They lost
8-2.
Sorry, yeah. Lost 4-0 on Saturday. Their goalkeeper had an absolute shocker. Oof. Of which more anon. And I noticed today that his stand-in or his deputy Mike Pollitt has conceded 23 goals in his last 6 games.
I noticed they play Bon Jovi's Keep the Faith at the final whistle.
It's a great song. Isn't that the mother, tell your children?
Yeah. You've got to keep the faith.
There's a bass line. I think that the good thing for Blackpool is they had nothing to lose, obviously. And that was a perfect opponent for the first round, because Wigan, as you guys said, were the whipping boys last season. So that's probably the only team they're going to actually hammer this season, actually get a 4-0 result.
We'll see. You were being so rude about Marlon Harewood last Thursday.
No, I thought he played very well, but I think it is worth pointing out. Burnley beat United and Everton in their first two home games last season. We gave them, bigged them up. You know, they ended up being 5 points adrift of safety.
After hiring Brian Laws.
Yeah. But Blackpool last season did finish 32 points behind Newcastle. They've lost DJ Campbell. They've lost Ben Burgess. I think Ian Holloway's done an amazing job. But if he can sustain it, it'll be a minor miracle, and I can't see it.
Barry?
Yeah, I was doing the 5 things we learned about the Premier League from watching the Premier League this morning before we came into the pod, which means I'm probably just going to parrot the entire article in here and it'll serve a dual function. But I did notice something interesting about Marlon Harewood in that I was going to check his stats to see if, you know, he's likely to go on a run of scoring now that he's got a brace in his first game, and if he's one of those confidence players, and he emphatically isn't. 5 seasons ago he got 22 goals for West Ham, and in the intervening 4 seasons he's got like, I think, 12 or 13 goals in total. I just think it's astonishing that somebody so poor can still trouser 10 grand plus a week playing football. And I mean, he's far from the only one in the Premier League doing that.
But Blackpool have a wage ceiling of 10 grand, so it will be 10 grand at most.
Well, that's a comfort.
It's still a lot.
Right. Okay, good. You were going to mention something about Charles Nzogbia.
Well, only that this morning reports suggest that he's gone on strike, having been described as mentally unfit to play.
Who described him? Was Roberto Martinez described as mentally unfit to play?
Huh. Well, he's agitating for a move away from Wigan, and he wasn't picked on Saturday. And now apparently he's gone, or I think he stormed out of training on Friday through a hissy fit and has been fined 70 grand, which I suppose sounds like it might be 2 weeks' wages. But he's a very good player, and there'll be no shortage of takers for him, I'd imagine.
Whereas Wigan are looking like a very, very poor team at the moment. There's only one game to go on. But how bad do you think they are?
It's easy to get carried away with one game. Let's see how they do in the next couple of games.
Yeah, that's
next
very up, sensible.
They play Chelsea. Right. They beat Chelsea last season at home. So, who knows?
They were a little bit kind of bipolar, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Right, OK, they play Chelsea next. Whereas Blackpool, of course, will be away at Arsenal, which will be very entertaining. Arsenal have just been to take on Liverpool, a 1-1 draw at Anfield. Oh, Liverpool looking good, Sean. Those impoverished Irishmen may get to go on holiday after all.
I was very impressed by Liverpool. They actually looked better after Joel Cole was sent off. I thought on goal up front, you know, did a great job. I thought Milan Jovanovic was decent. Cole, I thought, had a shocker. He passed just 8 times during that first half. And he was barely in the game. I know, it's early to judge, but he didn't have a starting debut.
Fernando, are you happy with life under Roy?
I don't think it would get worse than the last two seasons under Benitez. So, I mean, it's obvious that there's something lacking up front. Torres needs to be fit. I don't think Ngog is the kind of player who will carry the whole responsibility well of actually scoring the goals. Although yesterday, fantastic goal. Although you could ask Almunia some questions in his position.
Right. His top scorer in Europe was crazy, according to producer Ben, with some bizarre couple together stat. But he has got 4 in the last 5. So is he actually really good? And it just took a year or two for the talent to flower.
He seems to have a problem with time in his runs, which was really annoying Steven Gerrard yesterday, because he was pinging balls up. Then again, it could be Steve Gerrard's wayward shanks up the field that are, you know, he needs to get off early to chase them. But I disagree with Fernando. I think things will get worse for Liverpool, not because Hodgson is a bad manager or they necessarily have terrible players, but I just think financial meltdown is very much ahoy there.
Well, there's financial meltdown ahoy for you if things don't get worse, because, of course, you bet 20 quid to Sean in this year's bet that they will finish outside the top 6. Hettenbaum was at the game. He said the atmosphere was terrific. Arsenal got a glimpse into what they would be like without Fabregas. It was interesting, because they did seem to lack a bit of a personality. I'm not going to criticise Reina, says Hettenbaum, howler at the end, which gifted them the equaliser. He's an absolute top-notch goalkeeper and made enough saves to keep us in this game, including that one from Rozicki, which was world-class, and it was, wasn't it? Terrific save. Mm. Almunia, meantime.
Keeper. Almunia is poor.
Yeah, I mean, that really underlined the urgency of Arsenal's attempts to sign Mark Schwarzer still.
Absolutely. I mean, Almunia is more flap than Jack. He's still coming out for corners. You don't trust him at all.
Remember, listeners, where you hear these buzz phrases first. More flap than Jack. Okay.
It's ready to be called for England.
The other thing that's quite interesting, though, last time Arsenal won the league, they conceded just 26 goals.
Yeah.
Which was the lowest. When they won it in 2002, they conceded 36, which was the second lowest. But if you look now, they always concede, you know, a reasonable number of goals, more than the league winners since then.
They've already conceded one this season, so it's worrying.
No, the point is, though, that you know, their defences often do win titles.
Oh, right.
And Arsenal's defence still looks a little dodgy.
Producer Ben's friend Ian has just mentioned that Warren Barton was saying on American television, so pretty much first-hand this, Warren Barton was saying on American TV on Sunday night that Shea Given had texted him to say that he just signed for Arsenal. How about that?
I'll see it when I believe it.
Let me move on to, what of Joe Cole, meantime?
Red card.
You don't
do a flying tackle with part of the pitch.
But he was sent off anyway. And what did you think of his performance before that?
Pretty much what that guy said. He was not clicking. He was, you know, killing some of the play, not actually connecting passes. Of course, it's a fast game, and he is a great player. But I'm just wondering if it's the right actually time to sign him, basically. he might be past his best, in my humble opinion.
Not the greatest of debuts. Producer Ben very kindly compiled a list of worst debuts ever. Probably the best one, though, was tweeted in by listener Northern Rights, who says, Ali Dai, surely. It's tough to beat his debut for Southampton.
If people YouTube it, yeah. Graham Souness's debut is great. After he gets booked in the opening minute, and then after 35 minutes, he rakes into someone from behind, sparking off a mass 21-man brawl, which he's in the centre of, swinging away. So that's worth YouTubing.
Oh, marvellous stuff.
Was Jonathan Woodgate's Real Madrid debut the match in which he scored an own goal and got sent off?
Absolutely correct.
And possibly gave away a penalty as well?
No, I'm not sure about the penalty, but yeah. Yes, that really was it. So Joe Coles, from that point of view, wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. I mean, you can understand why he got sent off, but it wasn't that stupid an attack.
He's not that kind of player.
And he's not.
Oh, he's not that kind of player.
This was amply pointed out on television.
But you cannot judge guys by their reputation. You judge them by their actions. And that was a dangerous tackle. It could have broken the guy's leg.
Actually, you know, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? Because there's so many players who seem like nice guys who are dirty as anything when they get on the football field.
Are we talking football? We are talking football.
How about Dennis Bergkamp, for example?
Zidane,
that's another one. Gianluca Vialli, I have to say, he could get stuck in with the best of them. Rake his studs up and down, all that sort of thing.
Pele was a great leg breaker as well, you know?
Pele?
Yep. He was fantastic to actually kind of like hurt guys when the referee wasn't looking, where the cameras weren't actually around, and there weren't many cameras around. But there's a famous Brazilian-Peru game that there was a Peruvian guy called Del Solá. He was hitting everybody, kicking lumps of everybody, and then Pele and Gerson are talking. And Pele said, right, let's give him one. Next play, he rolls the ball halfway between Gerson and this guy and say, go, papagai, which means go, parrot, get him. And Gerson just wrecks the guy in pieces and there's a massive brawl, etc. Yeah, he was pretty good elbowing people as well. You know?
Oh, fantastic. How would we access that YouTube footage?
You look, Pele, dirty bastard, or something like that.
Okay, all right then. All right then. Now, meantime, we were mentioning, Barry, the assorted howlers from goalkeepers, the length and breadth of the league. It was a curious weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of them seemed to have smeared butter over the gloves before they went out to play. Scott Carson dropped a clanger. Chris Kirkland had a nightmare.
Well, Pepe Reina, obviously.
Rob Green. Had another.
Yeah. That's surprising, isn't it?
Rick.
Yeah.
And Reina, Almunia, the new Sunderland keeper, Mignolet, he let in a soft one as well.
So the exception was Joe Hart. He was outstanding against Spurs, was he?
Mm. If only he'd been out in South Africa, that would have been...
because the goalkeeper was the only problem England had in South Africa, wasn't it?
Well, possibly not. But, you know, without the Rob Green era in the first game, then who knows what, you know, sliding door-esque butterfly effect paths we would have taken. But, you know, I think we all know, actually, which paths. But anyway, Joe Hart was, as you say, brilliant and pretty much saved Roberto Mancini's elegantly perfumed and powdered bottom.
It did. Yeah, it's worth pointing out we were... criticised a bit on the blog for talking about City's defensive midfielders, but yet they, you know, once again Mancini away from home, he played Torre, he played Barry and De Jong, and Opta report that neither De Jong or Torre attempted to put a pass into the opposition's penalty area. I thought City were tremendously poor. Again, it's early days, but Mancini, as he admitted himself, he's had a team that he's only just really sort of introduced themselves to one another, that he's going to have to get playing as, you know,
but he's been the manager now there for a while. I think it's perhaps a little bit disingenuous to suggest that he's dealing with the situation not of his own creating. This is his team. He is the manager of Man City. Everybody seems to be talking about it as a race against time before the whole thing boils over in some hideous kind of golf club wielding unrest. And he does seem to be making, I don't know, interesting choices. Tevez as captain, doesn't speak English.
Yeah, I don't think Carlo Torre is that impressed about that.
No.
It's interesting he sent Craig Bellamy to Cardiff.
Yep.
It's very difficult dealing with that many egos and that many new players. There isn't much of a hierarchy at the club. Shay Given's going to be unhappy now as well. I think they're in for a choppy season.
Harry Redknapp says they won't make the top four. Agree?
I think they'll struggle. I think, you know, I don't think they'll finish top three.
I agree. They won't finish top four, in my humble opinion, again.
I think it's too early to say, to be honest. But they don't seem to have anything resembling a plan.
Right.
They're just buying players that are available or buying players because they're really, really good. And it's very difficult to see what they're going to do with them all.
They looked better, I think, when Adebayo came on.
Right.
For 10 minutes. They gave him a bit of a focal point.
Right. What about Rabinho? What's the story now with him?
I think he's going to Fenerbahce. Apparently Fenerbahce offered £23 million for him.
Did they?
Yeah, but I heard something going on. I think there was a story today in one of the rival newspapers. Turkey will be different. It's a club that's had Brazilian players for ages. They know Alex is in there.
Right.
You know, it would be much easier for him to settle. And Istanbul is a great city. It doesn't look like a rainy prison like Manchester looks for him.
But as we say in English, a leopard can't change his spot. You know? So that's the end of part one then, listeners. And more terrific pod analysis to come as we tackle that Diego Maradona Villa business, Chelsea, and lots more other interesting stuff after this. Now, another surprise-ish, given the way they'd come into the new season, was Aston Villa's big win on Saturday afternoon. Fine goal from, for that third goal with the new lad, Mark Albrighton and James Milner. Very impressive. Milner probably off now, of course, but in other respects, a very positive afternoon.
It was, and I was reading a few Aston Villa message boards, and it's quite interesting that we, in London, you know, tend to regard Martin O'Neill as an eccentric genius, and we praise him very highly, but certainly a number of the Villa fans haven't been as impressed with him, particularly recently. And there was a sense that the shackles were freed on Saturday. I would say, however, that West Ham were very, very poor. I thought they might be relegated, and I sort of bet on them a while ago at 5-1. Keeping Rob Green, keeping Scott Parker, keeping Carlton Cole, I thought they'd be all right. But they offered very, very little, and they were deservedly thumped on Saturday.
Who's going to be the manager, do you think, at Villa Park? This Diego Maradona thing, could it really, really happen, Sean, please?
We put a call in yesterday to Aston Villa, to a couple of the guys on the board, and they were sort of saying, no way. Oh. And Sven, I think, said no as well. And Bob Bradley, they were sort of privately very cold on that.
Who were they not cold on?
Well, I think they're going to give Kevin McDonald a reasonable stab, and if he can get his team playing like they did on Saturday, it may be him.
I got the impression the Maradona speculation was fueled entirely by Maradona and his people, in much the same way as I started putting out rumours that I was going to get the Aston Villa job.
Interesting. And
I'd say I probably have as much chance of getting it as Diego Maradona had. But it would be fantastic if he came to manage in the Premier
League. Yeah, it'd be pretty great if you were manager of Villa as well, Barry. I think we'd all find that incredibly entertaining.
But Flamengo once had a radio guy, a radio reporter as a manager in 1995. Yes.
How did that come about, Fernando?
Well, he won two games, including a game in Argentina, but it was horrendous.
How did he get appointed?
He was friends with the president, who was a former radio journalist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was actually a radio commentator, a guy who did a pundit, and he got the job with Romario and Edmundo playing for Flamengo. It was like the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in a football pitch.
Wow.
Me and I can't remember if it was guys in here or mates outside of the office were having a discussion saying if I was manager of Manchester United, how would they do for a season? Mm. How would they do? And I was adamant they would be relegated, even if I tried my best. But the lads reckoned that despite my interference, they would probably be good enough to stay
up. I think there
up.
Are some clubs that are already set up, and Chelsea would be one of them.
Avram Grant under Chelsea, you speak to a few people there, they don't think he actually had much influence, and the players really took it amongst themselves and pushed them to a Champions League final and second in the league. So I think I'm not saying it's just that Barry is up there with Avram Grant, but I think United would probably realise that Barry wasn't much of a manager and do much of their own thing quite quickly.
Mm. Other favourite moments this weekend then? I enjoyed Everton's new away kit. That's special. Magenta. A sadly underused colour in kit stylings.
And not really, because the T-Mobile cycling kit used to be magenta.
Yeah, but it wasn't such an aggressive shade.
Sorry, are you having a G issue now again, or am I? Because this is harking back to you.
Is it magenta?
I always thought it was magenta.
No, it's magenta.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Also, what?
Can pink ever be aggressive?
This isn't pink, this is magenta. It's very different. Look at that shirt and tell me it's pink.
Don't Toulouse, the rugby and football teams, play in pink?
Juve played the horrendous Gazzetta dello Sport pink a couple of seasons ago, didn't they? I bought that shirt once.
Well, they used to play in pink back in the day, and that was a reference. It was their centenary year.
Yeah.
And, of course, Palermo are the famous team who play in a very attractive, kind of more pastel, pleasing shade of pink, not, as I stress, magenta. What on earth Everton thought there? Also, this is a difference here. Palermo, you're looking at a group of tanned young Mediterranean types, not Everton in magenta.
Did you see Phil Brown?
I didn't, but everyone's talking about it. Tell me.
Well, he was just a very loud shirt with a sort of chest hair hanging out. It was very much, 1970s.
This was on Goals on Sunday.
On Sky. Aye, girls, come back to my pad and I'll show you a good time.
Right.
And the contrast between him and Dower, Gary Megson next to him was terrific.
Oh, my word. To finish off this part, Chelsea.
I love the fact that pre-season sometimes counts for nothing, They just basically pretty much didn't look like a team who had lost like 4 out of 5 or something like that. They trounced the poor Baggies.
No, they did. 6-0. Drogba, who, you know, vaguely negative opinions were being aired about in this pod last Thursday, scores 3 and then says, we're not even ready yet.
Well, the fact they've scored 47 goals in the last 10 games at home now sort of smacks of a team that, you know, doesn't fear anyone at Stamford Bridge. West Brom, though, I thought were poor. They lined up to a system that was set to defend, yet, you know, the first goal was a horrible fumble. The second was a mess. I mean, it was abysmal. And I think we should give a nod to Frank Lampard, who completed 35 out of 36 passes, and I thought had a very good game.
Wow, that's impressive, actually. Yeah. Oh, and Ramirez, in fact, Fernando, it'd be good to hear, actually, Ramirez, Alexoman posting in, saying, got to get this off my chest. Are Chelsea really going to go through with the signing of Ramirez? Is nobody else's mind screaming Kleberson over and over again at the top of its voice? Is he the new Kleberson?
Unlike Kleberson, Ramirez had a good season at Benfica. They did well for Benfica. They were quite reluctant to let him go. So I think he should have less problems. The problem with Kleberson is that he wasn't ready for the game here at all. If I'm not wrong, he broke his shoulder, dislocated his shoulder in the first training session because he was really tiny. He was whacked by, don't remember whom now, but he basically got injured really, really early. While Ramirez have played in an European league and perhaps is a bit more ready for the challenge. I'm not saying that he's going to be a shoe-in, but he's a great player. He did really well for Brazil under Dunga, and now in this new time, in this new era, he seems to be fitting quite well.
Well, we were watching the highlights of the USA Brazil game from when was that? About a week ago, no?
Yeah, it was the 10th. Yeah,
and he puts a killer ball through for Pato for the second goal, Ramirez.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw it, but Pato actually has the time to round the keeper, look at the linesman to see if he's offside, and then slot the ball in. That was a brilliant goal.
And he scored a great goal against Chile. I mean, I saw him a couple of times in the World Cup, and I thought he's an interesting because he's a defensive midfielder that actually likes to bomb forward as well and dribbles and has a good eye for goal.
Very useful signing then. The other player who scored in that Brazil-USA game was, of course, Neymar. And what's the latest on him? Will he be? What did you smile at? I pronounced that completely wrong.
No, he's right. It's just because I think that this transfer is going to be like a huge soap opera after Santos decided to threaten Chelsea with a complaint to FIFA for illegal tapping up or something like that. Apparently, the player has already agreed personal terms with Chelsea, but Santos doesn't want to sell. They have like a contract clause in which Chelsea has to pay up a lot of money before they can even talk to him. And I think this whole threat might delay things a bit, but it's obvious that the Santos and no other Brazilian club would be able to hold Neymar for a while. He's a very good kid. Here's a case where people should actually be worried about how he's going to fare. He's going to basically be plunged from a Brazilian team. He's being really young without being actually tested, and then be thrown into the Premiership. I don't know. I don't think Chelsea are the best team to actually groom talent, to be honest.
How old is he?
He's 18, if I'm not wrong, 18 or 19.
Terrible haircut.
I might be wrong, he's 19, if I'm not wrong.
He looks a bit like sort of a Jedward. I mean, a Brazilian Jedward, but there is something like that going on. But he's done brilliantly for Santos. Why is it that Santos are the only Brazilian club who could hold on to somebody like that?
No, because he's homegrown.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No, I don't think Santos can hold on to him. It's a bit more like a negotiation, like, well, we have a huge clause in your contract and that's it.
Can I just ask you, Fernando, it's a tweet from Zonal Marking. How will Brazil change post-Dunga? Which players will stay and which players are likely to go? And then will there be much change from 4-2-3-1?
No, they're going to still be playing 4-2-3-1, judging from what I've seen against the Americans. There will be a lot of changes. They're also thinking of the London Olympics. They want to win this title. That's something that Brazil never won, the World Cup. So they want to really do this kind of like putting the average age down.
Brazil's a very young team.
Yeah, right? Brazil's team in South Africa was the oldest squad we've ever sent to a World Cup. Yeah, I reckon that he's going to use he's got a hands man or Mr. Menezes. He's got the players from Santos, Ganso, Robinho, and Neymar, although Robinho's not Santos anymore. Alexandre Pato seems to fit well in this scheme of things. There are good players coming around. Lucas Leiva and Ramirez in midfield seems to be a good partnership as holding guys and for this boy Ganso to actually run the show. They look really promising against the Americans. But let's remember it was a meaningless friendly, although you could say the Americans had a base from the World Cup. They played with everybody, including London Donovan. So it's promising, but we shall see what happens when things start going wrong.
But the Brazilian public back in love with the team again.
Yes, they were pretty much amazed because the game against Americans was fluid football. They were playing like kids. Probably they didn't feel the burden of expectations. They could have beat the Americans like 5 or 6-0, which would be like, in my opinion, like a horrendous result because it would put people, you know, out of their minds. Let's look reasonably what's happening here. It's a new team. Could they click together? Yes, but I still think, you know, have to work a lot what's going on. The defense was a bit overexposed. It's a patience game. That's the problem. Brazilians don't have patience.
So they could have beaten them 5 or 6-0. Instead, the Americans drew 2-0. Little World Cup reference. A couple of posts before we roll on. Vandervaart next says, Glenn Denning, I've been reading the book Man Skills by Nick Harper. You're mentioned in the acknowledgements. What link have you to this fine book?
I was supposed to do a bit for him about how to do a lucky 15, I think it was.
Or what's a lucky 15?
It's a complicated accumulator bet.
Oh, right.
One would put on in a betting office.
Man skills, is this like things you ought to know as a guy?
Yeah, how to, you know, avoid being eaten, how to beat off a shark. Not that way, in a
sex
way.
You hit it on
the
nose.
Yeah, but punch it in the nose or go for its eye. How to, you know, place a lucky 15, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I kept forgetting to do it despite repeated reminders.
Right.
So in his acknowledgements, he went, you know, special thanks to all the people who had written his book for him. And then no thanks whatsoever to me.
What did you contribute, Sean?
I don't think I contributed anything.
No.
He didn't want anything about, you know, cooking or drinking wine or anything like that.
Asparagus on us.
See, I like, I think I've been thanked in 4 books and acknowledged in 2 CDs in my time. So.
Excellent. All right.
It's good to know you're keeping a running tally.
Oh, absolutely. I'm an egomaniac.
Now, Jesse Plainmore says, I can't believe no one knew about Bebe, the homeless footballer. The papers are usually all over him, which is a pretty fine work on a, you know, delicate social issue. England managers, speaking of delicate social issues, Barry, you were contention last week that Capello is the worst England manager of the last 37 years. Cable 1973 did you the favour of statistically working out their win percentage. Capello has the best of the relevant bosses, 69% win rate. Hoddle 60.7, Ericsson 59.7, McLaren 50, Robson 49.5, which goes to show actually you can't trust statistics, can you?
Well,
bottom,
I mean,
of the pile is Keegan, though, which maybe
if,
is.
If your idea of a good manager is, as one pollster posited, that you know, his defence of Capello was that he'd just won his 10th home game in a row against Slovakia.
Yep.
Or Hungary, I mean. You know, so what?
Right.
That they're not the kind of games you want to be winning.
Indeed not. They're not. But he's not.
I think you'd have to go some, though, to say that Capello was worse than Kevin
Keegan. I was genuinely surprised by the amount of opprobrium I was furled my way after making that assertion.
Terrific stuff. Have you got any other opinions you'd like to chuck out there?
Pele was overrated.
Hmm. In the meantime, Europe is back, ladies and gentlemen. Champions League and Europa League qualifiers coming up this week. It doesn't get more exciting than this. Let's have a look at one or two.
It does, though, doesn't it?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Look, Villa, Aston Villa, are away at Rapid Vienna, the very same team that beat them in the Europa League playoffs this time last year. Woof. Exactly. Celtic are taking on Utrecht. Liverpool are at home to Trabzonspor. Tell us a little bit more about them, Sean.
They're a small Turkish side. Mm-hmm.
They did the Turkish Cup double.
They did the Turkish Cup double, but Liverpool should win quite comfortably.
Yeah. Man City are taking on Politehnica Timișoara. They are the fifth place team in Romania, established in 2002. This will all be on Thursday. Craig Bellamy, Stephen Ireland not in the Europa League qualifying squad. But Robinho is. Interestingly enough, Robinho is in the squad for that. But to Champions League qualifiers, maybe this will tickle your fancy a bit more, Barry. Spurs are away at Young Boys of Bern. There's a very funny thing about their stadium. They've got a plastic pitch.
I thought you were going to tell us what their stadium was called.
No, come on, let's move on from that. They are second in...
It's
they were second
that anymore.
Isn't it? Did they change it? What do they call it
something
now?
Something Swiss Stadium, but let's not... I don't know, you'll be able to know what it is, but it's not called that.
All right, so. They were second in the Swiss Super League last season, and they've just beaten Fenerbahce to get to this qualifying game against your Spurs.
Yeah, they said on Sky on Saturday that your old mucker from Serie A days, Joe Jordan, was off to Switzerland to check out their plastic pitch.
All right, nice.
So he'll be able to brief the Spurs players fully. I mean, it
does look like a dream draw for Tottenham, doesn't it?
Ah, yeah. Well, they could have got a lot worse, but it would be remiss of them to underestimate the young boys.
Let's remember Basel. Nobody gave them a monkey, and then they embarrassed a lot of people in that 2002 season, wasn't it?
Yeah, they certainly did.
You know,
Poor Jimbo.
No, I'm just imagining them without a monkey, but still managing to embarrass people.
If Spurs did manage to balls up their qualification for the group stages, they certainly wouldn't be the first English team to do so.
That's very true. That's very true. You mentioned tougher draws they could have had. Werder Bremen would be one. That's who Sampdoria are going to be playing. Now, the one question about this, though, Werder Bremen, of course, have Özil, but if they play him, he's going to be cup-tied, and the word at the moment is that he's all set for a move to Real Madrid. So, presumably, him not playing in this game might be contingent on that deal, or the deal might be contingent on him not playing this game. Well, that'll be interesting, because Sampdoria haven't been in the European Cup under
it's kind of holding the club ransom a bit, because it's the last year, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Bremen will have to do
well,
something.
Well, it's their mistake for not signing him to a deal before now.
Yeah. You can walk on a free next season.
Basically. Yeah. But 14 million now, but after seeing him in action this summer, you'd think that was a bargain. Sevilla, who just beaten Barcelona in the Spanish Charity Shield, they're taking on Braga, who are currently top of the Liga Sagres after all of one game in the other qualifying match for the Champions League.
Pointing out Benfica, who are the champions, lost 2-1 at home in Portugal. And if you YouTube it, the winner was a spectacular goal from about 35 yards. So,
Okay. Nice. Dynamo Kiev taking on Ajax in the other game. Andrei Shevchenko, of course, now at Dynamo Kiev. So that'll have a huge impact on that match, I'm sure, eh? Right, that's Europe. Champions League qualifiers on Tuesday and Wednesday, the Europa League qualifiers. We have to wait until Thursday for those. And, of course, we will have Football Weekly Extra returning before that. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that on Thursday evening. In the meantime, many, many thanks to producer Ben. Back on the Wheels of Steel. Barry Glendenning.
Thanks.
Sean Ingle.
Thank you.
And Fernando Duarte.
Cheers, guys.
And you, the listener. We'll catch you later on in the week. Have a lovely time. Until then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.